Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is Episode 7, Stop Calling Me Chief.
Hey, welcome everybody. This is Color Country Politics, our latest broadcast talking about local issues with local people, local political leaders. I'm Jenny Hendricks. I'm here with Terry Hartley, Cindy Bullock.
Hi.
And our special guest today is Ken Carpenter, our newly elected sheriff. Welcome. We are thrilled that you are here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Thank you. So we've just got a couple of questions for you, and then we'll kind of let you take off and talk about kind of what your vision is, if that's okay.
Sure.
Super.
All right. So I'll start. Okay. So Ken, the sheriff's office has faced kind of some challenges from both within the department and then between departments or other elected officials.
Right.
So what strategy do you have to infuse a new culture in the sheriff's department and between other departments, both within the county and other agencies?
It's a great question. And I first, let me just say, I think that the sheriff's office is in a good position right now. When you look at some of the struggles that were faced here 3 years ago, 4 years ago, there was a lot of difficulty that the sheriff's office was going through at that time. But they've moved beyond that, and I think that they're on a good track. And I think that the relationship between the sheriff's office and the county commission is essential. But I think that there's been a lot of goodwill on both parts of the sheriff's office and the county commission. I mean, we've seen that in the last few months that $500,000 has been put into raising wages for the deputies. That's very important.
It makes us
much more competitive than they have been in the past. So that's key. As I've sat down and talked with the commissioners and commissioner-elects, I feel very positive about the direction that the sheriff's office and the county commission is going.
That's great.
But as far as your question, as far as, you know, changing the culture, that's going to be done through a lot of different things. And we'll talk about a lot of those things today. But throughout my campaign, I talked about five principles. The first was integrity. The second was initiative. The third was innovation. The fourth was courage. And the fifth was leadership. And when I talk about those things, those are absolutely key. Those are going to become a mantra for the sheriff's office. That without initiative or without integrity, integrity is the most important leadership trait that there is. And without that leadership trait in one's life, then none of the other leadership traits matter. Mm-hmm. And it's especially true in law enforcement. In law enforcement, we have been given the special trust and confidence of our citizens to be able to take a person's liberty away from them. And if we don't have the integrity to be able to be 100% true all the time, then everything else is valid.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to make sure that we're living our lives that our integrity is never questioned. The initiative and innovation, those two really go hand in hand with each other. And in law enforcement, officers work and deputies work by themselves a great deal of the time. They have to be able to look at a situation and see where something needs to be done. And they need to have the initiative and the innovation to be able to take that initiative to go do what needs to be done and to address the issue. That's where we really find success. And I can give you a couple of examples if we have time for it.
So
here, almost a year ago, we had a young man that died of heroin overdose. Mm. And one of my officers spoke with that young man's father and asked for permission to take his phone and to be able to look in it and see if we could identify who sold him that heroin.
Oh, wow.
That has been a fantastic investigation. It has led to leads that have been investigated, additional arrests, the seizure of additional phones, additional rest, additional leads, additional rest, and it has spidered out and gone out and out and out.
That's great.
And, you know, the thing that's so important about that type of initiative is hopefully this officer has been able to prevent other parents losing
sure.
their child that something as senseless as a drug overdose.
Right.
You know, the same thing happened with our investigation on the pharmacy burglaries. You know, we've had pharmacy burglaries that have gone all the way up the I-15 corridor from Las Vegas to Nephi. And one of my sergeants felt like everybody had some of the information, but none of us had all the information. He sat down and arranged to get all the detectives together. He included the DEA and the FBI. They sat down and shared all the information that they had. And now the DEA and the FBI have been able to follow that those leads back to California and have identified a specific gang that has been responsible for those.
That's amazing. And that's something that I think, as we've been going through this process, that kind of collaboration keeps kind of bubbling up to the surface. It's really an amazing thing when you think about, you know, just Little Iron County and how much we've been able to accomplish by recognizing the importance of that collaboration. I think that's
right.
amazing. That's fantastic.
But that's where these officers and deputies have to have that initiative and that innovation. They have to have the tools to be able to exercise that initiative and innovation to be able to find problem or solutions to the problems mm-hmm. that we face.
Mm-hmm. And I have a question before, I know you want to go through your points, but when you talked about, since you led with it with integrity, I mean, how are you going to do that? Because I really think maybe having worked with a lot of those officers and with the current, you know, I think they are honest. I think
I
they
too.
Have a lot of integrity. So how are you going to do that? Or what do you see? You know, I want to dig a little deeper and not just the bullet points, but what does that mean to you? Or how do you expect to do that?
Well, so part of that is through example, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is making sure that the leadership that is in place is always exemplifying that. And that everybody understands that that's an unpardonable sin. If your integrity is compromised, we no longer have use for you. You can no longer serve as a law enforcement officer. And that special trust and confidence that's been bestowed upon us by the community mm-hmm. is being revoked. And it's time to go find a new career because you can't succeed as a law enforcement officer if your integrity is jeopardized.
Oh. That's great.
Perfect.
Do you want to take the next one?
All right. I have one comment on the collaboration issue, too. It seems like in the past we've seen departments that compete with each other rather than work together. And
right.
so I think it's great that you're... Well, you've moved more to work together. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I'd love
how
to.
How that's come about?
I would love to. And I'll tell you this, too, is I think that here in Iron County, we do a much better job at collaboration than they do on the Wasatch Front.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that, you know, time and time again. Several years ago, I had the opportunity of going to the FBI National Academy back in Quantico, Virginia. And one of the classes that I was in, we were actually asked to write a book for the International Association Chiefs of Police on intelligence-based policing. And one of the things that we found while we were putting together that material was that a lot of the problems the agencies were having was because they weren't collaborating together. Instead, the chiefs and the sheriffs were saying, this is mine and I'm going to protect it at all costs. And instead, they need to be looking at it from a different perspective, because when you look at drug cartels and organized crime, they're sharing information.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in order for us to defeat them, we need to do exactly the same thing. We need to be sharing all of our information and working together for the common good of all of our citizens, not just, you know, for what we think is good for our own agency. And when you do that, it makes all of us successful. And one of the things that I think has been great here in Iron County, and it's been here for a long, long time, is every the first Friday of every month, all the chiefs and sheriffs from Iron, Garfield, and Beaver counties meet together, and we share law enforcement information with one another, and then we talk about specifically drug task force information, SWAT team information, and then the Critical Incident Task Force information. You know, and those are, and we also have that opportunity to talk about any other things. But we not only have the chiefs and the sheriffs from these three counties, but we also extend that invitation out to all of our federal partners. So we have DWR, we have DEA, we have just a lot of support from a lot of different agencies, national parks, national forests.
And do they actually come and attend?
Absolutely, they do. Right? And it's been very successful. You know, and that's where we're able to talk about things. You know, several years ago, a few years ago during the Obama administration, when the federal government shut down, Obama ordered that all the national parks lock their gates. And Sheriff Perkins over in Garfield County sat across the table from the chief law enforcement officer from National Parks and said, look, I understand that you have your orders and that you have to lock these gates, that you have to understand that those are county roads and that I need to keep them open. So after you lock them and fulfill your responsibility, I'm going to kind of cut all the locks off.
Wow.
And that's what happened. But we were able to share that information because of the mutual respect that we have for each other. It wasn't a big deal.
That's amazing.
That we were able to move forward.
That is amazing.
And wow. Do what our
that's
citizens
encouraging
expect
to hear
of
that.
Course.
So, well, just kind of leading into that, that as an outsider then to the sheriff's office coming in, what do you plan to do to gain support of the deputies that are there?
Well, first you need to understand is I'm an outsider only in the from the aspect that I haven't worked for the sheriff's office.
Right.
You know, I've been back in Iron County for 14 years. I've worked 7.5 years with Cedar Police Department. I've worked 7 years as chief in Parowan. And during that time, I've worked very, very closely with deputies out on the road. I've worked very, very closely with Mark Gower and Del Schlosser. I've worked very, very closely with the SWAT team as the commander of the Armed Metro SWAT team, which includes officers from Cedar PD, SUU, Iron County Sheriffs, Beaver County Sheriffs. I know these guys. I've been working with them for 14 years now. And so I think that that's one thing that's important to remember. But on the other aspect is I kind of equate it to taking off a pair of socks and throwing them in the corner. You know, you take off your socks when you get home from work and throw them in the corner and you think I'm going to pick them up later. But if my wife's not home to say, pick up your socks, then I'm going to keep walking by them. You know, and pretty soon I just get used to them sitting there. And so unless my wife comes and picks them up, then they may not get picked up. And I think sometimes that happens when we have people that are continually promoted from within an agency. And within our own Iron County Sheriff's Office, it's been probably over 50 years since anyone from outside mm-hmm. has come into the Sheriff's Office. And so while I don't think that there's any great big glaring problems, I think that there are things that, well, this is just the way we've always done it. And that sometimes there's a better way of doing it and that we need to be able to look at those ways. And sometimes it takes a fresh eyes and a new mm-hmm. approach mm-hmm. to be able to look at those things and identify those things and be able to recognize that just because this is the way we've done it for the last 50 years doesn't mean that that's the right way to do it now mm-hmm. or the best way to do it now. So I think that that's part of it. But there's a number of things. I think that one of the things that we need to do is make sure that the playing field is level for all the deputies within the sheriff's office. I've had some deputies that have told me that their perception is that there's those that are in and there's those that are out, mm-hmm. and that those that are out don't have those same opportunities of mm-hmm. promotion or duty assignment or whatever it is. I don't know whether that's true or if that's just their perception. But if it's their perception, then that's their reality. Yeah. And we have to be able to change that perception. And I think that part of the way we do that is making sure that everything is done on a competitive basis. And the way that I would look at doing that is a 50% performance-based evaluation that 50% of that change is going to be based upon their performance. And the other 50% is based on a testing process. And that gives everybody that is interested in that change of assignment or that promotion to be able to say, this is what I have done in the past, and this is what my knowledge level is, what my capabilities are, so that we're ensuring that we get the best qualified deputies in the best spots, and give everybody that opportunity so that they all know what the standard is, and the standard is it doesn't become a moving target for them.
Sure, that's great.
One of the other things that I think is going to be very important to that is what I call a point paper. In the Marine Corps, we call it a point paper. And a point paper is just a one-page paper that is problem, discussion, recommended solution. So if a deputy says, this is a problem, and then they explain why this is a problem, and this is what I think is the recommended solution for that, and that gives everybody the opportunity of being able to identify those things that they believe need to be changed, and for us as a command structure to be able to look at that and identify, is this really a problem that we need to look at, or again, is this a perception that we need to change to perception?
Yeah. But, great tool.
But when we start doing those types of things, it gives them buy-in. They mm-hmm. recognize that their opinion is valued, and that they're not just blown off. Mm-hmm. That they have the opportunity of making real change that is going to be important to the agency as a whole, and to what they're doing out on the street or in the jail.
That's great. Speaking of the jail, there has been talk about the necessity of a new Iron right. County jail.
Absolutely.
What are your thoughts on timing, location, funding?
So that process has already started. One of the things that you need to know is that our jail is the oldest jail in the entire state, mm-hmm. and that in some jurisdictions there's already been two jails built in the time that we've had our
law. Oh, wow.
Hey, our jail is inadequate for our current state. The female housing is much, much too small. Yeah. The county commission recently gave $30,000 to renovate one of the gyms in the jail for female housing, in order to try to keep us in compliance. There's been a number of issues with the sewer system and, mm-hmm. and drain systems and whatnot that just to put a Band-Aid on it is going yeah. to cost another $1 million. Those things are, it's time to get a new jail. We've just outgrown mm-hmm. the ability to be able to stay where we're at. So currently where we're at is there have been four sites that have been identified as potential places for a new jail to be built. Two are out off of Highway 56. One is on the bottom of 1600 North, down below Equestrian Point. And then the fourth is property that the county already owns out by the county landfill. We have met with SUU, and they are going to do a feasibility study on the four great. Pieces of property. And we're expecting their results to come back to us in April timeframe.
Fantastic.
As far as where we go from there, that kind of depends. A lot of that is going to depend upon, the citizens and their support, and upon the county commission and their support, and what we feel is going to be the right thing, right now. And right now there's been differences of opinion in that. One of the commissioners believes that we should save $1 million for 5 years and then try to get critical infrastructure board funding to match, to help defray the cost. That's a possibility, but there's people that say if we wait 5 years, we're waiting too long. Yeah. We're going to be way behind the power curve. Mm-hmm. It's too little too late. As I've talked with Dan Jessen about it, he feels that the interest rates are going to continue to climb, and that we're better off bonding it now, and that we'll save more than the amount of money that we would gain by saving $5 million right. over the 5 years by bonding it now at a much lower interest rate. So those are things that have to be considered, and we need to be able to look at those and determine what the best course is. And we're still a ways out for that, but I think in April that we need to, and before April, we're going to definitely be talking about it and coming up with a plan. But I think that in April, we're going to really have to be prepared to start introducing that plan.
That's good. I'm glad.
So how did those four sites even come about? I don't understand that much as far as how that even... I mean, I've heard that there were four sites, but How does that?
So part of it is based on what the needs are, you know, because you have to have a certain amount of space to be able to house a facility that big at large. So like right now, what we're looking at is probably about a 500 bed facility.
Wow.
And let me just go back just a little bit too. So when we talk about how are we going to be able to pay for this, you know, we don't want the taxpayer to have to pay for it all. You know, we can do different things. We can bring in inmates from both the state and federal systems, and they'll pay us to house those inmates. So the state pays about $50 a day per state inmate. The feds pay about $75 a day to house their inmates. You know, that's, you know, anything above our operating cost is profit back to the county to go towards paying off, you know, the bond for the jail. You know, so there's one way that we could really help generate quite a bit of money to be able to help pay this off. To go back to your question, is how the sites come up. A lot of it comes up to, you know, how much property do we need and who do we need, who do we know that owns that type of property, and are they willing to sell? And then the location, you know, is this something that is going to not upset the neighbors? And is it also going to be in a location that is close enough that we can get, you know, inmates transported out and be able to get the deputies and officers back on the street? You know, that's one of the problems that I see with some of them is, you know, for example, Brian Head and Parowan, it's a long drive to go from Brian Head and Parowan all the way out to Highway 56 or out by the landfill. But, you know, there may be some options to help cut down some of that driving time as well. So, you know, that's what we have to wait and see what the feasibility study is going to show us and see, you know, what the best location is really going to be. The big part of the problem is, though, is that the county is growing. It's going to continue to grow. And, you know, we want to make sure that we're good neighbors. And so ideally, we're going to be out where we're not going to be bothersome to, you know, the growing community, but we still have, you know, power, water, sewer, you know, the things that we need in order to run a facility that houses 500 inmates.
Yeah.
What's the size of our facility now?
I don't know exactly how many beds it is. It's about 300, though.
Okay, so pretty good increase.
Yeah.
Is that something that we'll have to go to a bond election, or is it something the commissioners will vote and decide general revenues? Or
yeah, well, now I really don't know. That's one of those things that I'll be educated on as we go through the process.
Okay. Fantastic. So.
They've talked more about bond just because the budget, the numbers, and I don't know, but the numbers that I've heard talked about are significant enough that we wouldn't have it in the general fund, that it would have to go to a bond election. But I don't know that for sure.
And I would venture to guess that you're right.
Yeah. Before we get to our last question. Okay.
So you've been planning this transition for some time now. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your vision for the Iron County Sheriff's Department?
Again, that's a great question. And, you know, part of the reason I ran for this office is because I believe that I bring to the table a certain set of skills and background experience to be able to help the sheriff's office go to the next level of excellence. I think that our sheriff's office, again, like I've said before, I think our sheriff's office is really in pretty great shape. I think that Mark Gower has done really a great job with the sheriff's office and has done some very positive things for the deputies. But I think that every time that you have the opportunity of having some change, that you also have the opportunity for growth. And if I didn't believe that I was going to be able to help the sheriff's office grow to that next level of excellence, professionalism, I never would have run for this office. So what do I see? Well, I see that the county is going to continue to grow, and that it's going to be very important for us as a sheriff's office to be able to keep up with that growth and to be able to continue to meet the demands of our citizenry. And right now, that's going to be kind of a fine balance between dealing with the agricultural side of our county, which is extremely important to us, and also being able to deal with the continued growth as people come in and bring their problems with them from across the nation. You look at, just I-15 alone, we have over 1 million vehicles a year that come through our communities on I-15. Wow. And if you take the national average, that 1% of the population is involved in some type of criminal activity, then we have a lot of criminals coming through our communities. And we need to be able to be able to deal with those types of things. So what does that mean for the sheriff's office? It means that we have to have excellent leadership, that both from the sheriff down through, the mid-level leaders need to know their job, and they need to be subject matter experts, and they need to be able to help develop their subordinates. I'll just tell you my leadership philosophy, if I could, is, and it's probably going to sound a little bit funny to you, but I'm going to train my subordinates to take my job. Mm-hmm. When you look at the Marine Corps has been successful at that for over 243 years. If you think about Marine Corps history, the NCOs and officers wear a red blood stripe on their trouser leg of their dress blue uniform, commemorating the 90% of officers and senior NCOs that were killed in the Battle of Chapultepec during the Mexican-American War. But the Marine Corps still won that battle because their young, non-rate Marines understood what the vision was, they understood what the mission was, and they were able to step up into the positions of their leaders and accomplish that mission. And the same thing has to happen within the sheriff's office, is the deputies need to understand what the vision is. They need to understand that we're about service. We're here to serve our citizens, and that service has to be paramount above all other things, that we're here to serve and to protect them, and that has to be the essence of the sheriff's office, and that they need to be able to have the tools, like I talked about earlier, to be able to exercise their initiative and their innovation, to be able to find better ways to be able to address the needs of our community. They need to have the leadership skills and the opportunity of being able to develop those leadership skills by attending leadership courses and by having leadership courses within the sheriff's office to help develop those skills, so when it's their turn to step up into a leadership position, they're prepared to do so. We need to be able to invest in them. Investing in them is extremely important because, for one, it builds loyalty, and secondly, it helps them become subject matter experts and to bring skills back into our community that we're going to need or that we need already. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be able to invest in these deputies. And like I said, it helps them feel committed to us because they understand that we care about their career path. We care about what they're interested in and are giving them the opportunity to be able to continue to grow in the profession that they've chosen.
I think that's so motivational for the people that are there. I think that's exciting. That's really cool.
We need to continue to work on our training. In the Marine Corps, we used to say the way we fight is the way we train. The way we train is the way we fight. Mm-hmm. And, again, the same is true. Is when we look around us, all across the nation, we look at things like active shooters and terrorism and all the different things that are taking place across the nation, we need to make sure that we have reality-based training that address the needs of our community so that we are absolutely as prepared as we can possibly be, so that we're not like Broward County, Florida.
Yeah.
And, that instead we are prepared for whatever situation comes our way. And we do that through training. And so we need to re-examine our training within the sheriff's office and look at how we can expand it, how we can make it more reality-based, how we can make it more professional in nature. And it's not that they're doing anything wrong, but there's always ways that we can improve it and enhance it, and that's what we need to be looking at doing.
Sure.
Let me just look at a couple of other things here.
You're the only podcast guest that has brought a typed outline. Well, that's impressive.
I actually cheated. I had the opportunity of speaking to the Rotary and Lions Club last week. And
oh,
so
fantastic.
I already
that's
had
good.
It.
Oh,
you're
making
had
the rounds.
Place,
that's but, great. Huh? That's great.
No wonder you're so polished. And
but, you know, there are other things. You know, keeping up with our equipment. Vehicles is a good example. You know, some of our vehicles are aged and have high mileage on them. That becomes a risk to both our community and to our deputies. You know, we have more pursuits that go through I-15 corridor than people would really realize. Yeah. And when you're, you know, pursuing somebody at over 100 miles an hour, things can go bad in a little quick manner. So we need to make sure that we're giving our deputies the best equipment that they can have. And as I've talked with Dan Jessen about that, he's got a plan that we can replace our fleet by purchasing brand new vehicles and rotating them every 3 years, and hire a vehicle maintenance manager that would be responsible for selling those vehicles. And by buying them on the state bid, we buy them low, and by selling them within a 3-year time period, we would sell them for the same price that we purchased them at or higher. And by Dan's numbers, he feels that we could save the county up to $400,000 by making that one little adjustment in keeping our deputies in brand new vehicles. So, you know, there's things like that we need to be able to go through and work out the kinks and present that to the county commission and start making those types of adjustments so that we can keep our deputies in with the equipment that they need, but also take care of our citizenry and also try to save money while we're doing it.
That's amazing.
There's other things that we need to be able to do, just from my level as the sheriff. Each year the legislature meets starting in January, and every Monday during the legislative session we have what's called the Law Enforcement Legislative Committee, and the sheriffs are all part of that committee. It's important for us to be there for those committee meetings because that's where we look at all the bills that are being presented that are going to affect our communities, especially in where law enforcement is concerned. And it gives us the opportunity of being able to determine if this is a good bill or a bad bill. And if it's a bad bill, how can we rewrite it or help rewrite it to turn it into something that's a good bill or something that's at least workable? Yeah. It gives us the voice of being able to say, you know, this is a bad bill and we need to oppose this as it's currently written, or this is a good bill and we need to be united to support it. And, so that's, again, that's something that's very essential to our county, is to make sure that we have representation at that committee. And
I think that's huge. And I think there's so much that can be done to kind of work through some unintended consequences, even with well-meaning legislation. Sometimes if you're not out, feeling the consequences of the legislation, you don't really have the ability to think through everything that can go sideways. So I think that's a big, big deal to have somebody there.
So those are some of the things that I'm looking at towards the future. And like I said before, with the point papers and whatnot, I really believe that a lot of the change is going to come internally from the deputies, that it's going to be things that they see that they want, would like to see change to help them do a better job and to be able to be more community-oriented and more successful in what it is that they're doing.
Fantastic. Any parting thoughts? Anything else you want our community to know about the new incoming sheriff-elect?
I'm very excited and I'm very grateful. I've stated a couple times here that the community gives us as law enforcement a special trust and confidence. And that's extremely important to me. And it's very humbling to me that the citizens have voted for me to take over from Mark as the sheriff in January. I'm very grateful for that. I look forward to doing that in an exceptional manner, and I look forward to being able to be out in the community and talking with people, and I want them to know that my door is open. You know, I'm a very open person. I'm a very straightforward person. You know, maybe sometimes to the point of being offensive. I don't mean to be offensive, but I am pretty straightforward. But I do value their thoughts and their input, and I want to hear what it is that they have to say. And I know that there's been a lot of concerns on the parts of some of our incorporated communities that don't have their own law enforcement, mm-hmm. that the sheriff's office continues to provide law enforcement mm-hmm. for. And one of the things that I'm looking forward to doing and hope that they'll support me in is assigning a deputy as a liaison to them so that they can attend their city council meetings, so they can talk with their mayors and their city council members and their community. And if there's specific problems that need to be addressed, that liaison is going to be able to bring mm-hmm. that back to me, and that we're going to be able to sit down and find solutions to their problems.
That's great.
And so, you know, we're looking forward to January and jumping in and moving forward.
That all sounds so exciting. We're so thrilled that you were able to come and visit with us today, and thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And we'll talk again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.